You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to a supplemental episode here on the 602. I'm excited to have everybody here. We've got a very full panel to talk about something really fun, and it is something else about Star Wars. There's just so much coming out these days, and with the books, especially being canon, and some kind of big things happening in some of these books, it's definitely something we want to talk about, and I think tonight we have something pretty cool to be able to dive into. So I'm really excited to get there. Before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, of course, that the 602 Club is part of the Trek FM network. And if you haven't checked out any of our other shows, I really encourage you to do so. Just go to iTunes.com/Trek FM and you can find all of our shows. You can also find all the shows on Trek.fm, our website. We've got our show pages there for everything we do. You can find all the links. We're on Twitter at Trek.fm, Facebook at Facebook.com/Trek FM. And then, of course, we've got the listeners-only discussion group where my entire panel spends a lot of their day talking about things that we post there. So join us in any of those places. We'd love to have you. And, of course, if you have any feedback on the show, please send that in at trek.fm/contact. Just choose the 602 Club. We'll get the message and we'll be able to talk about it maybe on air. So one more thing before we dive right into our subject tonight, where our supplemental. We are still running the iTunes review contest, and we still have about another week for that. And everybody get in your reviews and star ratings. Put those two together, because it's only with the written review we'd be able to pick a winner. We've got some really great things for you if you do win. $50 gift card to Amazon, a USS Vengeance from Eagle Moss, and Norm and I are going to be doing a special supplemental episode with the winner to talk about whatever they want to talk about geek-wise. So some really big prizes there for you guys, and I'm really excited because the idea of getting to have one of the listeners actually just join us in the 602, I'm beyond excited for that. So I want to introduce my panel. Some amazing guys, and I'm always lucky to have them. Bruce, of course, we're talking Star Wars, so that means that you are probably going to have to be here. How's it going, man?
It's going well. I was at a Kansas Royals game last night, and they won, and I had plenty to drink, and I'm still feeling it 24 hours later. And
rookie. Awesome. So that means you had a good day at work.
I had a great day at work. And so Ruby's going to contribute even more tonight.
Awesome. Mike, great to have you back in the 602 Club. How's it going?
It's going pretty terrible because I'm a White Sox fan and the Royals are about to win the division and the White Sox are on the verge of elimination. But thanks, Bruce, for bringing that up.
No problem. That's what we do on sports podcasts.
All right.
Oh, did you want to give him a nice paper coil and pour some lemon juice in it? Oh, geez. John, of course, it's in the bylaws for the 602 Club. If we're going to talk Star Wars, that you do have to be in the bar. You don't necessarily have to be on the show. You at least have to be in the bar. Oh, but it's great to have you on the show tonight.
You'd be surprised how often I'm in the bar when the show isn't broadcasting, Matt. You really would. And I just want to say, for all you people complaining about the sports stuff, I'm in the D.C. market. Okay?
Oh,
that's it. That's all I have to say.
Right there on TV. Your team is losing.
Yes. Whoa. Hey. Wow. Shock.
Hey, Ruby, can you turn that off? We got something to talk about over here. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
She's turning. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about Lost Stars. It's a part of the Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens series, and it is a young adult novel. But unlike the other young adult novels that John and I talked about that were pretty slim, but unlike those, this is a nice tome. It's a hefty tome here, and I got to say, I was really excited that we were going to get an opportunity to spend more time in this universe. I had no idea when I got into the book just exactly how much time we were going to spend in the Star Wars universe. In fact, we're going to go from the Rebels time period all the way past Return of the Jedi. So this book really does take the entire original trilogy of Star Wars and give us a completely new perspective. In fact, this book takes place from the perspective of the Imperials and the Empire and what they think, how they feel about things, what it's like to live in the Empire and be a part of the Empire, why people want that. So I wanted to ask you guys just what your general Imperial impressions were about the book.
I'll go first.
All right, fine. Go for it. Yeah.
I'll be short and to the point. It was really great. I really enjoyed this. I did not expect this book to be as good as it was. I picked it up because I read those other three books that we discussed previously, and I said, what the heck? I'll pick this one up, maybe this. And I was completely floored by this because of how much I enjoyed it and how much I connected with the characters. Wonderful book. And actually illustrates the time period, like you said, Matt, really completely, and gives a full sense of what it was like to be a quote-unquote regular person during a time that we've seen from the perspective of the heroes.
Yeah, I thought the book was, it was better than I thought. When I was going into Journey to the Force Awakens, I was thinking I'll read Aftermath and maybe I'll get to the young adult novels sometime later, depending if I have time. And then Matthew convinced me to read Lost Stars. And here I am, and I am so glad I read it because I liked it better than Aftermath. I loved how the story just progresses through different time periods and focuses on characters and building their relationships in this universe. That I really liked.
Yeah, I was pretty much in the same boat as you guys. I had fully intended to just read Aftermath. You know, I figured I needed to draw a line somewhere, and drawing it at, like, young adult.
This father, no father!
Exactly. I'm like, young adult books, that's where I draw the line, you know? And I went into Target, and I saw Lost Stars, and I'm like, what the hell is this? This thing is, like, massive. What is this? I thought this was for kids. And then Drew explained to me what young adult meant, and I'm like, fine, I'll read this thing, fine. And I read it, and yeah, I mean, it's, you know, clearly the best of the new canon novels so far, and I'm really glad that I did as well. And it's also kind of annoying, because now I have to read all those other books, the little kid books, and but whatever. I'll do it.
Surprisingly enjoyable.
I think that was the thing that was so nice and refreshing, was to pick up this book. And, you know, I obviously read the flap and kind of know a little bit to what I might get out of the story. And then as I was reading, it was just, you're being immersed in the world of... And in fact, just starting right as the Empire is really taking over and it's annexing a planet. So you're seeing exactly what that was like as it begins to move across the galaxy and become the powerhouse that we know it will be by the time the rebellion is in full swing. And I mean, answered the question, you know, that was made so famous by Clerks. But what about the guy just working with the plumbing in the Death Star? Is it really his fault? I mean, does he deserve to die? And this is a book that answers that question about those people, as well as the people who put their heart and soul into the Empire because they actually believe in it. They think that it's going to be a good thing, that it's going to change the corruption of the you know, the Republic, that all the things that had happened. They buy into the propaganda of the Empire. And it does such a fabulous job of doing all this. And geez, reading this book, I mean, I'm thinking this is important stuff. I mean, we're talking about the death of a Republic and the turning into an Empire and how that happens. The importance of the prequels. I mean, this is a great book for kids to be reading. I mean, I can't wait, you know, maybe one day to talk about this with my kids, because there's some really important themes in this book. I didn't expect that coming from a young adult novel that's kind of seems to be aimed at the Twilight generation. You know, I'm not expecting that. But I think Claudia Gray, the author here, just like, I mean, she nails it. This is a home run. This is a touchdown. This is a hole in one.
You know, I think that in terms of portraying, you know, like the turning into the empire and everything, I think that one of the stronger aspects of the way that she pursues that theme in the book is illustrating how easy it is to forgive the offenses of a government, because you say, well, you know, there are going to be little problems here and there, but it's not really everybody that's bad. I mean, in a sense, you can get an idea of how somebody could put a bubble around themselves, because there's no question the Death Star was terrible and everybody on it, you know, like it throws the question at you, because you get the perspective of the people in the Empire. Oh, well, you know, the rebels, they, you know, yeah, Alderaan died, but you know, there was a justification for that. It was going to stop the war from happening and all of the people that were on the Death Star. But I mean, the honest answer is, you know, when you look at it, well, they knew full, like, there's no way anybody was on that Death Star. You would have to be fooling yourself so severely. I think that she really broke down the worthwhile topic of how much are you willing to forgive what your government does because you perceive that the ultimate goal is good, you know, order from chaos and, you know, getting rid of quote unquote corruption. How much are you willing to forgive before you finally realize that it's, you know, there is no excuse for, you know, necessary evil is still evil.
There's that, but I think it goes deeper than that to, like, sort of this personal level, which, you know, I mean, you see happen all the time. You know, it happens in politics, religion, happens in Star Wars, where someone is so loyal to a thing that they can no longer see what that thing has become, you know?
Yeah.
And they're no longer thinking for themselves or doing or participating in this thing because they love what it's doing, but it's because that instead they're justifying what that thing is doing so that they can still live with being a part of it. And, you know, I mean, you get that with you know, the main character, Sienna. Is that her name right? Sienna?
Sienna.
Okay. And you know, she's like, I took an oath. I can't back out of my oath. I took an oath. And it's like, yeah, but you took an oath for something that you thought was something else, you know? And she just can't, like, let go of that. And I think that that's kind of interesting, you know? And, I mean, it really sort of applies to a lot of stuff in, I think, everyone's lives. Everyone does that, you know?
Well, going into this, I agree. It was all about the loyalty. When they're entering into the Empire, I thought it was interesting. Their point of view of it was if they were entering Starfleet Academy in Star Trek, as if it's this great utopian institution, organization that's going to bring peace and goodwill to all the worlds. And even their home planet thought things were going to be better because now the Empire's here. And they were going in as like Starfleet officers, and they're studying opera and literature and all these different things, and their view of the Empire is so skewed. And then with that loyalty on top of it, it's almost like if they do something bad, you can't believe it. It's going to take tons of different events like this to happen for it to really hit their heads, hit them over the heads with it. But as we'll talk later, I'm sure one character sees it earlier, the other one with her loyalty stays with it.
Well, and I think this is a perfect time to kind of dive into that whole idea of this imperial point of view, because I think this book puts us in an empire state of mind, what it's like to be a part of the empire and to buy into it, because all we've ever seen before is the opposition to the empire, and we knew that it was bad. But this is kind of like being on the other side of the communist revolution in Russia and seeing it as a good thing. That's exactly what this is like, and I think that's exactly what she's really referencing, because I can remember this stuff late, obviously, in the 80s, you know, with the way that it felt. You know, the Empire reminds me of East Germany and right. the drabness that it becomes. And like, but it starts off as being this thing that looks like it's a glorious savior. Like the empire's going to come, they're going to turn us into a socialist utopia, and it's going to be awesome. Like they're going to fix all our problems, and the we will have safe, secure prosperity, as the emperor says.
But to extend your to extend your analogy, you can also see, because the people that lived under czarist Russia, like when the first revolution came and in Russia at the time, you know, it was needed. Like that system of government had fallen down. The Republic was broken in Star Wars. It was, and you can see the cynicism baked into the populace of, yeah, the Republic said they had all of these great ideals, but they didn't actually execute them. And, you know, the Jedi didn't really stand for anything terrific, or if they did, they didn't really carry through. And we've talked about that numerous times as well. But it shows how easy it is for like a Stalin type of figure to come in, or somebody to come in. You know, there has to exist a situation where people are desperate for the system to change in order for the bad person to come in. And I think that this book also does a good job of showing how the populace itself, I mean, one of the main characters, Thane, is raised with this cynicism about any government at all, and it pursues through the whole book of when he does finally turn against the empire, it's like, well, you know what, I'm fighting against the empire, I'm not fighting for this other system, because they're probably just as crummy as this one is. I don't really believe in it, but I think that this one is even worse. So it can show how that mindset is so toxic to begin with.
Well, and what's really interesting too, you know, these two characters, Sienna and Thane, they end up at the Imperial Academy, and you know, Thane is always the, like you said, the cynic, and part of that is because of the family he grew up in and the structure. His dad was a terrible person and beat him, and you know, it was just a bad place. So he always looks at authority and he takes authority with a grain of salt. He doesn't really expect that they're going to live up to what they say. But it was really interesting because once they get to this Imperial Academy and they think it's going to be wonderful, and it turns out to be this place that is, it's hard. I mean, they are crushing down these people so they can build them back up into their image, you know, what they want them to be, and pitting them against each other. It was like Imperial Hunger Games with the way that they, especially the way they deal with Sienna and Thane and pit them against each other. And it was just, it was so interesting to watch because all the clues are there for the characters to pick up on really early. But it's interesting to watch them that it takes so long, and we as the audience know what's going on. But they're really doing a good job of making them not feel stupid for not getting it. And I think that was huge, because that's a really hard thing to do when we already aren't on the side of the empire.
Well, and they're kids too. So they're not going to pick up on those things probably right away. The older they get, the more they start to perceive the world and for what it really what it is. And it just takes them time to get there. But you know, I think with Thane, his relationship with his parents, he was able to see that quicker than Sienna because of the situations he grew up in, of being abused and being ignored. And so he's always looking for faults. He's always looking for, there's got to be something wrong. This can't be right. Where Sienna looks at everything as, well, you know, whether it's right or wrong, if I make a commitment to it, I'm loyal to it, I have to stick with it. If I've gave my pledge to it, whether it's right or wrong, I have to stick with it. And unfortunately, that's what she did.
There's a really interesting thing that I saw happen here. And, you know, the famous thing from Star Trek is Spock's line, the Vulcan axiom, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And what I really liked here is that Claudia Gray takes that and gives it that evil twist. Like, the way that logic can be just totally destroyed and into something really evil, which is exactly what Sienna does when the Death Star destroys Alderaan. She takes that logic and says, oh, okay, so we killed some millions so that billions can be saved, so that we can stop a war. And I love that, because that's a big thing in Star Trek, that Spock kind of moves beyond just pure logic to wisdom. And it's interesting to watch that happen to the characters in this book, that they move from kind of the logic of things and trying to rationalize stuff to get to a place where they have the wisdom to be able to say, this just isn't the way things are supposed to be. And either that, or they're like Nash Windrider, who's an Alderaanian pilot. He's from Alderaan. They destroyed his own planet, and he cuts himself off and just continues to serve the Empire as if, because that's the only way that he can make sense of the world, the universe. So this book is so nuanced. I think I just was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, I do want to give a brief shout out that the idea of an Alderaanian remaining loyal to the Empire was actually in one of the Marvel comics from the original run back in the 80s, when Leia ran across a stormtrooper who was from Alderaan, and he had a similar sort of mindset as Nash Windrider. So I was actually really glad that this book, I don't know whether Claudia Gray read the comics back then and brought it back for that reason or not, but I thought it was a nice echo of a really great storyline that resonated even back then, because Nash Windrider is easily the most, I mean, for me, I don't know how you guys feel, but for me, he's easily, hands down, the most fascinating side character in the entire book. Like, I was so fixated on keeping up with him that I just really, really enjoyed where that arc went and sort of the exploration of the, you know, the psychology behind him. I thought it was really, really neat.
Well, and he really is that person, I think, that you truly, and along with Sienna, get to see that how people slide down the slippery slope by they rationalize that one thing that they know is wrong, but they do it anyway, and how you just continue to chip away at your conscience until you end up like Rey, Sienna Rey, saying, I was so dedicated to honor that I became a war criminal. This book does an amazing job of showing how somebody that may have been good could be a Nazi war criminal, or, you know, any of those things. Like, this is how it happened, because we allow ourselves to get caught into something without giving it true thought, really thinking it through, or we just readily accept something without, you know, vetting it, seeing where it goes, what it really believes in, what it really is about. So, yeah, this is some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody would agree, right? I mean, what's explored in here is, you know, I think it's, you know, sort of inevitable. I mean, like, comparing this to, say, Aftermath, like, that this was, you know, sure, people are going to say young adult and everything, but I don't know if you guys agree. I mean, this was a much deeper experience, just in terms of what it explored.
Yeah, it definitely was, for sure.
I think that's true, and I think that, you know, part of it is because of what we're talking about here, but I mean, I think there's two other elements which are very important to this book's success, I guess. And one is, I mean, what the story really is about, I guess, you know, beyond sort of like the subtext, which is, you know, the textual, you know, aspects of the story, which is, you know, this is a love story, you know, and between these two characters. And I think that it's really well done. I mean, it reminded me a lot of like the Before Sunrise series, you know, which I think are, I mean, those are some of the best movies ever made, right?
Yeah. Yo, I've
had them recommended to me many times.
Oh, stop recording. And what we got this, we can take care of this. Go watch it right now because it's amazing.
I hear and obey.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and that's really sort of like what I saw going on here. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm kind of like a sucker for that sort of stuff. But I think it's really effective and sort of like heartbreaking and sort of gets down to, you know, sort of like what we're talking about, like putting a face on these literally faceless characters from the original trilogy and saying like, well, what was their story? Like, we've seen that guy die a million times and we cheered it and it was awesome. And you don't actually see him die. It's just a ship that blows up and it's a very abstract thing. But here, let's say there's a guy in there, you know, and here we're going to get to know him and then we're going to kill him and then you're going to feel really bad about it. And I think that that's really cool, you know, and sort of like taking it down to like basically just two people and saying like, here's the story of what's going on behind the scenes of these movies that you love. I thought that was pretty awesome. It's kind of like the Star Wars version of Lower Decks. But then it's also, and here's the other part of it, it's kind of the Star Wars version of Forrest Gump, which is in the sense that it's like these characters, and I have very mixed feelings about this, okay? Because logically, it's the dumbest thing ever. But emotionally, it totally works, right? These characters are literally involved in every single moment that you see in the original trilogy. And it's like, okay, fine, they're there. But does, like, Jude need to be the one who figures out the problem with the exhaust port? And does, you know, I mean, they do that all the freaking time, you know? Yeah. Up until the freaking trailer for the freaking new movie where everyone's like, oh my God, look at that. There's a crashed Star Destroyer. How did that get there? Oh, well, it was this person. It was the same person, you know, like the person who like decoded that thing for that other movie. It was that person. They did it. Yeah, I know. It's weird, right? I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, it really does sort of put a face on it. And it makes you relate to these stories in a way that I think a lot of these expanded universe stories don't. In that, even though it's about characters who we've never met before, it's getting you involved in sort of these events. And it's using that device as sort of like a way to, it's like a form of shorthand. So it doesn't need to sort of set up all of this stuff, which really is unnecessary to the story that they're telling. But, you know, it sets up the background. It sets up, you know, all the other characters who you're seeing running around and everything like that. And really sort of the whole situation. And I think that it's really effective. I mean, that's one of the things which sucked me in is I was very excited to see how it tied into everything and how it mirrored what was going on in the original trilogy and all that stuff.
Well, and it's really cool because in some ways they kind of give you characters that sort of mirror what you saw in the original trilogy with our trinity of characters and their little band, you know, and you get to follow this, but from the other point of view. And so it again, you're like you're saying, it just feels familiar. So you're very comfortable, but you're watching everything play out from the other side. And when they're involved in all the big things, and you're like, well, it makes sense because, you know, they're the characters that we're following. That's how we're telling the story in the same way Star Wars is told through the eyes, you know, in the original trilogy of Luke, Han, and Leia and Chewie. You know, that's how we tell that story. This story is just told through Sienna Ray and Thane Carell and Nash Windrider and Jude and all these people. So I really like that. And I thought it was an effective way, like, that it's just, it makes it feel like Imperial Star Wars, you know, like this is the Empire side, you know, whereas the other movies are the Rebel Star Wars. And it's a kind of a nice, it's a nice mirroring effect, which George Lucas does a lot. And so, again, it feels like I'm back in the universe to which I'm so accustomed to being in. And there's no disconnect like there was for me with, say, Aftermath.
You keep on saying, like, this is, like, the Imperial side of Star Wars, and I totally see that, and I think that that's how it starts. But I think for the bulk of the book, it's not. I mean, I think kind of, like, the thing which makes it unique is it is sort of, like, a Civil War kind of scenario where you have, you know, brother against brother, or in this case, brother against sister, or lover against lover, and you're seeing the same story told from both perspectives, you know? And I think that's kind of the, one of the things which makes it unique. I don't really see this as being an Imperial story so much as a Imperial and Rebel story, like side by side, you know? It's a mirror in itself. It's not a mirror to the trilogy, at least for me.
I agree with that, but I think where it gets the hook with the Imperial side of things is, I think that the biggest part, I mean, like, it's easy to hook onto something and say, like, oh, that's where this crashed Star Destroyer came from. Oh, that's how this happened. Oh, that's how this led to that. I think that the biggest, and this gets back to the whole idea about talking about how you can be party to atrocity without processing what it is you've just been a party to. We all know at this point, because Abrams has spilled it, that, you know, we're going to be seeing basically the First Order, the remnant of an empire, still fiercely loyal to the tenets that it stood up for. I'm not spoiling anything for anybody. Abrams has said this in an interview. And I think that this book is most useful in creating those, like, setting the stage for those characters to come, like, it's giving us the sort of sideway, backdoor backstory to all of the bad guys we're about to see in the new movie.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I wanted to touch on something that you said, Mike, was the idea that this is that kind of Romeo and Juliet love story between these two, you know, especially with, like you said, where it does end up, where it becomes Imperial against Rebel in the end, you know, and that last, you know, third of the book that really takes off. But more than that, I was like, this is like the last of the Mohicans here. You know, he even says, wherever you are, wherever you go, wherever we end up, I will find you. And I was like, okay, Daniel Day-Lewis, is this the last of the Jalukans then?
Well, I mean, that's I mean, it's a plot device, but at the same time, you know, I mean, I can't say that I wasn't bothered by, you know, the idea of, like, oh my God, and he's right there, and I'm right here, and we were connecting again, and it's, you know, our paths are crossing once again, and it's like, obviously that's necessary, and I'm willing to forgive it because it's a thing, but it is kind of. It is kind of ridiculous.
The Force works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, Force works in convenient ways. Okay.
Oh, of course it does. But I mean,
it's,
you know, that's
the Force.
But that's even one of the journeys. Is Thane's journey is similar in a sense to Han Solo's, where he's the cynic, there is no greater power sort of thing, and then at the end he's like, "Must be, we kept running across each other."
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I'm sorry. That's just lazy. Okay?
No, it's the Force. The Force brings them together.
Yeah, I know Force.
No, okay,
brings
Mike.
Together.
Just so you know, the Force is an energy field created by all living
and
things.
And midichlorians.
So they're totally connected.
And it binds us and surrounds us brings us all together. It's like kumbaya.
It's ridiculous. Okay, I'm willing to forgive.
Well, okay,
it.
I have to say, Mike, I know that you have wanted a story that didn't have any damn Jedi in it. And there's no Jedi. There's very few talk of the. There's very little talk of the Force here. Yeah. So I figured this book would be right up your alley because it's exactly what you've been asking for.
And you're
a
young adult too.
Yeah, I'm a young adult. I mean, we talked about last week on Trek Stars how I'm a big fan of young adult fiction or whatever ways or another. Dawson's Creek, you know,
that's
forever.
True.
But. You know, I mean, yeah, no, I mean, that's totally true. I mean, I guess this, what I was saying when I said that, you know, or what I meant when I said that was, you know, I want to see different sides to this universe that go, like, really outside of the box, you know, and I understand that we are getting a different side of this universe, like, literally, like, the other side in this story, but at the same time, it's intrinsically connected to everything that we've seen before. What I meant by saying, like, I don't want to see any damn Jedi in a Star Wars movie or whatever, is I meant, like, I want to see something. I want to see the Star Wars equivalent of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, I mean, the go-to idea, which I think is perfect, is, you know, a mockumentary with Max Rebo and his band going off on adventures. I want something which is super crazy outside the box.
I don't want to see that. I'm
I
sorry.
Want
to
so
see
long,
that.
So,
that
so long as it's
Wars
not
universe.
Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes, because they are never going to get less than a rated R if they stick with the name of the music that they play.
Yeah, that's a terrible band. Yeah. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's talk about these characters, because they really are the heart and soul of this book. It is Sienna Ray and Thane Carell, in which, interestingly enough, I don't know if anybody caught into this, but Thane is actually the exact same age as Ezra from Rebels. He is born on Empire Day. And so that was a nice and interesting touch to see that. But unlike Ezra, he follows the path of the Empire for at least a good two-thirds of this book. What did you think about these characters, and then some of the side characters that you really, really liked, as we already talked about with Nash? Does it work for you what she's doing, especially as we have all kind of mentioned, this is very much a love story? Does everything come together for you and work in a way that, and we were all dudes here, we don't have any ladies on the show to tell us whether they thought the romance worked, so it'll be interesting to see where we all come at this.
I love the romance. It's just so romantic. No.
Wow, you sounded like Anakin there in
Anakin's my
Attack of the Clones.
So what came to mind for me is, and I don't want to keep comparing this book to Aftermath, but I'm going to end up doing that. When I do improv, we're told that the best scenes, the best stories, are those when we already know the characters already know each other. They already have an existing relationship. In this book, I like that these two main characters, after really the first chapter, you jump ahead with them. We're now in the middle of an established relationship with them. They have a history together. That's what made them and their relationship more interesting, and then it was built upon. In Aftermath, it was characters meeting characters meeting characters, and really by the time we got to the end of the novel with that group of characters, they had just formed a partnership. They just became a group. So we never got to really get to know them as a cohesive group with a relationship. So I would say, more so than the characters themselves in this book that I really liked, it was more of the relationship between the main characters and their friends. And it was interesting, too, with Nash, and John said earlier, he's a side character. I thought it was interesting how the book ended. The last scene was about Nash and what his future might hold with the Empire, that he's going to have a much bigger role in that setting in the Empire.
Yeah, for me, the most interesting thing about either of the main characters, I mean, I love both of them, Sienna and Thane. But for Thane, what I thought was really cool was, it's always been difficult to resolve mentally why Luke wanted to go to the Imperial Academy so bad. And I think that Thane's journey, now granted, Luke, so far as we know, didn't suffer any sort of like abusive relationship with Uncle Owen or anything like that. But Luke just desperately wanted to get away from his existence. And I think that Thane, by coming from that same background, makes Luke's desire to go to the Imperial Academy in the first place way more understandable. You're like, oh, Luke's not even thinking about, I'm going to go serve the Empire. He even says later in the movie, I don't love the Empire, I hate it. But the Imperial Academy is a ticket out of this horrible life that he doesn't like anymore. As for Sienna, I thought that she was just a really well-rounded, intelligent character and very sympathetic. And I thought that she was refreshing in the sense that I think she really answers the call that people have put out there to have more assertive and believable female characters in the Star Wars universe. I think that she really answers that call. She, like, I loved following the character through the book. And so, yeah, I mean, that, you know, those main characters, they really did power everything, you know, enough to get Misty when they had their more troubled times and stuff like that. Really, really got me in the ticker.
Yeah, I thought that both of the characters were really good as well, and I think that they played off of each other, you know, really well. You know, I mean, it really is sort of about their relationship, and I think they did a really good job of setting it up and paying it off. You know, I do like the sort of format that you're talking about, sort of like the before sunrise of it all. And, you know, I really do kind of love that, you know, because you get to know them so well when they're at the academy, and then when they split and then actually switch sides and everything, it's like, yeah, you know, they really are sort of like these two people who can never be together, you know, and yet they love each other, and it's just like, it's heartbreaking. And because of that, I think the romance works really well. And I think one of the reasons why it works really well, in addition to that, is the fact that she does such a good job early in the book establishing the characters and their relationship. You know, it's really hard to understand why any characters in any book or movie fall in love. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, well, they're in love now, you know, because, I mean, that's how it works. But here, I mean, they really earned that. And I think that that was really cool. The only problem that I had with it really was the ending. I think that was kind of weak, although I wonder, you know, especially since you're talking about like the book ending with Nash and everything, like, is this designed to be like part of a series?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too, because it felt like it was a little open ended.
Good question.
Yeah, very open ended. I mean, not just with you know, like, oh boy, the Empire, they're not done yet, but also like their relationship. You know, like, well, it's, you know, I mean, because like as they were ending it, I'm like, okay, this is going to end in this way. I guess we're not spoiling stuff. I don't know. Are we spoiling stuff?
Oh, you can spoil the crap out of this.
Spoil the crap out of it? Okay, I thought they're going to die. You know, they're both going to die, and that's how it ends. But then it's like, well, you know, no, you're imprisoned, and I'm outside here, and, you know, I guess we'll see how this plays out, but, you know, there's a good chance that you're not going to be in prison, so that's cool.
Right, so we might be together, and we might not,
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, always leave the audience wanting more, right?
I mean, to me, like, it had to end one of two ways. It either had to end with them both dying or them both being completely separated. But for it to end with them literally being in the same room, just on other sides of a force field, that didn't work for me.
Well, this is what I was wondering. Will we be introduced to a character in The Force Awakens that will go, aha, that is the child of these two? Because there'll be that name or something like that that connects to The Force Awakens.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
No, but I could honestly see somewhere and being a side minor character, somebody like a Thane or a Sienna, or obviously Nash could be a part of the, you know, a minor character with the First Order. So I think that's a really cool thing.
That's what I was wondering. I thought maybe Nash might show up, you know.
I think it ends a little bit open-endedly because it does kind of leave that mystery. You know, I think what was really fun about the love stories, I think we, anybody who's of a certain age, even if you're younger, you've probably had that moment where that person that you've known for a long time, you just all of a sudden see them in another light, and they're, you know, it's like the most glorious moment ever. It's like all of a sudden they start wearing the halo and they glow in a way that you just, and I love that the way that she does that in the story, where these two characters have that moment, they've grown up together, and all of a sudden something snaps inside where they're like, whoa, this person is awesome, you know, and I don't know why I never saw that before. Like, and not just awesome because they're like friends, but, you know, there's that whole part of growing up that she really nailed here. But there's this other side to it, as we've talked about, they have this love that can never really truly be, because love isn't enough. It just isn't in this world. You have to have the same values for a real relationship to work. If you don't have the same values and the same things to live for, you're not going to be able to sustain a relationship. And this book really plays that out, because Thane and Sienna never have the same drive in their life completely when they finally are falling in love. And that's a really interesting thing, I think, to honestly teach kids. Love's not enough. You got to have other things too, because love doesn't conquer all, and it doesn't here in this story. And what I love is it really goes to that wonderful quote from Shakespeare: the fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves. And the fault lies in these two characters not being able to see eye to eye on what they deem as truly important in life, and what they're willing to live for and die for. And I think that's so fascinating that this young adult book is talking about this really huge issue.
Yeah, I think that also in terms of their value systems just being just a touch out of alignment, the most interesting aspect, as we talked about before, is you would expect her character to be the one to see the truth and leave the empire and say they're dishonorable, I can't stay with them. And it's Thane is the one who comes from the troubled background that you would expect to stick with it and say, well, everybody sucks and I'm just going to stay with it because who cares? But the cynic is the one who sees the light, and the one raised with this sort of almost Klingon sense of honor, really, is the one that sticks. Well, I guess maybe it makes sense, I think that this is the sort of thing where I would rather my daughters read this kind of love story than the Twilight kind of love story, which I did subject myself to. I did read all four of those books because I was challenged.
God.
Yeah, I was challenged to, so
two.
I did.
How did you do it?
That series of books, that young adult series of books, portrays love as this needy, codependent, just awful thing to behold, to be honest with you. Whereas this book shows two people who are fully realized and possess, intellectual and emotional faculty on their own. And like you said, Matt, finding out that, yeah, you can be in love. Yeah, you can be massively attracted to somebody, but you have to consider all the aspects of your life in order for it to work.
Yeah. I, again, young adult, this book is not. I mean, it might be in the young adult section, but what's being dealt with here is anything but young adult, which I think is perfect for any of the young adults reading it, and heck, even the adults reading it. I got a ton out of reading this book. The themes that are going on are just really fascinating to me, and I can't recommend that you pick this up more highly, so I'm just going to say that now. We'll go on with some other things.
Well, I just wanted to add one thing to that? It's a shame, though, that when there's young adult novels, we put it in that category of, well, I don't really need to read that. I'm an adult. That's for younger people. But Rebels is for even younger children than young adults. Clone Wars, same thing. And even George Lucas, when he made the Star Wars movie, says, these movies are made for 9 and 10-year-olds. But we don't shy away from those. But when it's in print, there's these categories of this is for the adults, this is for the young adults, this is for the kids. And I actually think Star Wars works better in a young adult and kids literature medium more so than the adult medium, in my opinion.
Well, that's a great point.
I mean, when I was going on this journey, on Force Friday, finding out what young adult meant, because I'm like, really, what does it mean? And, Drew is trying to explain this to me on Twitter. I'm like, so basically, it's basically a made-up thing, It doesn't, I don't understand what that, I'm like, if this is the definition of young adult, then Star Wars is young adult. So why are you making this, this distinction? And, that's why I decided to read it, was because, like you're saying, Star Wars is young adult, And I guess it's just a marketing thing. I mean, that's got to be what it is, right?
Yeah, it's a marketing thing. I mean, having worked at a bookstore for 3 years, it's definitely a way to entice kids to read by giving them material that's aimed solely at them. But I mean, the same thing could be said. You know, Harry Potter is a young reader's book, but it's for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. You know, obviously, The Hunger Games, it's a young reader's book, but everybody's read it and everybody likes it because it's just a good story. And so good story transcends all, you know, generations. It doesn't really matter. But I think you're right on, Bruce. Look, Star Wars has always been for young people, the young at heart. And it's when we take it too seriously that people start to not like it, I think. And then they get upset because it doesn't fit within their adult parameters and it's too kiddie, you know? Like, I don't like Jar Jar because he's just a dork. Well, you know what? But if you saw it as a kid, all the kids like Jar Jar. So it's for them. And when you can't put yourself back in that young at heart phase to see a Star Wars movie, you're definitely losing something, and this story captures, I think, the beauty of both. Like, it's young adult, but at the same time, the themes are resonating way beyond that age.
I mean, the problem is that, like, there is, I mean, you know, like, I agree with what Bruce is saying, that it makes sense, you know, that it would be accessible to kids and everything like that, but certainly they have set up certain levels, and it's like, I mean, like, I do this every time I see it. I'll be in a grocery store and there will be like a sticker book. And I'll be like, well, this is canon. You know, they've said flat out, this is canon. Am I supposed to read this? Can someone tell me? You know, and I mean, it's like, where do you draw the line? And I thought I could draw the line at where they were like, well, this is young adult. It is almost like they're saying, this doesn't really count, you know, but you can't. So now where do you draw the line? And I can't figure that out. I guess you draw
it. You're buying the sticker book.
I'm buying the sticker book. And see, that's the problem, is I can't make any rational decisions of my own. I'm a completist. So I have to buy these freaking sticker books.
You realize that there is some room in Disney that monitors all broadcasts about Star Wars, and they just heard you say that, and they're like, excellent, increased targeting in the Chicago area now.
I am fully aware of that, and they are too. They have their hooks in me so bad, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've given so much money to Disney over the years, it's not even funny.
They're just like the Empire.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they're the evil Empire. And I'm just like Sienna. I can't think for myself. I'm just following whatever they say.
You're very
loyal.
This
is canon? Oh, I better read it. Okay, cool. So what if all the other books suck? I'm still going to read this one. Yeah.
We like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to Star Wars in our own way.
Yeah.
Goodness. Well, okay, so this book... atop of the characters, the Imperial point of view, it really sets some things about canon about the Imperial life and just life in general during this rebellion period and even before that, in that kind of rebel period, but from the viewpoint of the Empire. So I wanted to talk to you guys about some of the things that we found out in this story about how the Empire frames, you know, the Clone Wars, how people view the Jedi and the Force. Obviously, we do get the answers about how there's a Star Destroyer on Jakku, the view of Vader and Palpatine, even by the Imperials, what they think of them, the way the rebellion works in contrast to the Empire was a really interesting thing. I mean, there's so many things that this adds to the canon. You know, John and I said it with those other three young adult books, but this is how you add to canon. So what were some of your favorite things, or what are some of the things you learned that you were like, oh, that's awesome?
I think it was maybe Sienna's father mentioned that the Empire is the Old Republic. And I sometimes forget about the fact that, you know, the Old Republic turned into the Empire. And I don't feel like that's really focused on a lot. And so the galaxy, the people who are living on these planets are just looking at this and saying, you know, what the Republic was infested by these Jedi. And we're told that these Jedi were the ones who were corrupting the government and were causing issues and pushing their religious views of the Force onto it, and they're gone. And because of that, we've reformed the Republic into the Empire, and things are going to be so much better now, and there's going to be so much unity, and we're not going to be in that war that we were for 3 years called the Clone Wars anymore. The Empire ended that, and they are so good, and they are so wonderful, and this is going to be a great time in our lives. And that just, I've always known that, but just to read that in a story really just hit me with the view of the people living in this galaxy of how the Empire may be good. But as we go through the story, they start realizing as people are turned into slaves and industry is hurting their environments. Some people are sheltered from seeing that in the Empire, but in these planets, things aren't doing well at all.
I think in addition to seeing the Jakku thing, which it took me by surprise, honestly, because I thought that was going to be in that video game. But and I guess it still will be. It'll be interesting to see if it contradicts. In addition to that, I guess, the thing that I really liked about it was nothing specific. It was more on the whole how it showed these events from a perspective which was different from the way that we tend to view them. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's the same for you guys. I'm assuming it is. But, you know, as someone who has grown up watching these movies since I was 2 years old, I have no way of looking at them with any sort of objectivity. You know what I mean? There's like, it's just a thing that exists, you know, and there's no separation. There's no sort of like, and it really takes effort to sort of analyze and see like why the choices were made, like from a storytelling standpoint and, you know, what all of it means. And I think by looking at it through a different character's perspective, you kind of see these events as being, what they are in universe. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I do. I think that makes sense. I don't know that I could really add to too much to what you guys are saying, except that I agree with you, Mike. The Jakku thing was not only a surprise, but the way that it played out was really interesting. Like that was the first moment, not the first, but it is a standout moment for me in terms of hype for The Force Awakens. When they got there and I found out what the Battle of Jakku was and why I should care about the Star Destroyer crashed there when I see it on screen, that was an exciting moment to say, oh, wow, right. Oh, okay, wow. Like, it's so weird to know that what I'm going into, I'm going to know what comes essentially right before, I mean, it's not right beforehand, but essentially what leads to it. And it's such a different experience from actually, I think they really tried this the first time with the prequels, with Labyrinth of Evil was supposed to be the book that led right up to Revenge of the Sith. But then they also had the Tartakovsky series and they both ended differently and they were both supposed to be the lead into the movie. Whereas this is much more careful and, as a result, like much more fulfilling in my view, because I know that they're not going to contradict what comes at the end of this book.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Can I just add to the Jakku thing?
Sure.
Okay. It was really kind of exciting to see that because, you know, the whole time that you're reading this book, it is following the events of the original trilogy and you get to, you know, the end of the Battle of Endor and you're like, okay. And then they just throw this like little cherry on top and you're like, oh, are they gonna, and then there, you know, you see it coming from a mile away, you know, she's on the Star Destroyer and you're like, oh, I've seen that trailer, they're gonna crash that thing and that's gonna be why that's there, and you know, this is the climax of this book and it's, you know, the thing that everyone loves in that trailer when the Millennium Falcon flies up and so it was really kind of exciting in a very fanboyish way, like you're saying, yeah. John, to see it. And yeah, I thought it was kind of a great way to sort of end this saga you know, this story, this particular story. I think it's kind of weird that in the story, and I mean, we'll see how this plays out elsewhere, that that Battle of Jakku is the one where they're like, okay, now the Empire is taken care of. And it's like, really? It wasn't the Death Star blowing up? Whatever. But aside from that, I thought it was pretty cool how they did that, really.
What was so interesting about this, too, I love that the way the book kind of helps you see how the Empire frames the Clone Wars, that it was Windu going in and stopping a valid execution that starts the Clone Wars, so they're able to blame the Jedi for everything and basically make them the traitors to the Republic, so it's okay for the Republic to kind of turn it into the Empire. You know, you make that switch for the safety and security of the... It's just so well done. I love that. To me, one of the most interesting things was the view of Palpatine and Vader to everybody else in the galaxy. It's a big question, has been, how do people view Vader and then even Palpatine? There's a scene in the book where they talk about there being like a hollow of Palpatine where he's smiling down at people. And I was thinking, that is the creepiest thing I've ever heard of, is smiling Palpatine. And then I realized by the end of the book, when she sees him get off on the Death Star, because she's in one of those rows there, she sees the Emperor. I think Palpatine's been using his old holos of himself, so nobody knows. But that, I love that we finally got confirmation that the galaxy doesn't really know what he looks like. Like, you know, obviously there's the big announcement in episode 3, but after that, everybody else, I guess, expects he just got plastic surgery or something and looks back to normal, because everybody else sees him as basically the, like, the happy grandpa that's keeping everybody safe.
Wasn't in this, was it this novel where they said that he's got people that stand in for him, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Decoys.
Yeah, decoys. Like Keira Knightley, I think, sometimes steps in as the Emperor.
Yeah, she really does a great Palpatine. Like, it's amazing.
Keira Knightley actually did stand in for the Emperor. That's
every once in a while Hillary Clinton too, but you know, she's harder to get.
Well, no, I think that, you know, that speaks, so long as we've talked about, like, the, you know, portraying the Empire and everything, that I think really underscores the power of propaganda, that nobody did know what Palpatine looked like, and that's why, like, when they see him for the first time in person, it's like, what just happened? Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but the moment when she, Rey is involved with, and not Rey from The Force Awakens, but this Rey, Sienna Rey, she is involved with picking up, she's the person who rescues Vader after the Death Star. They take a ship, they go and rescue him, and which I liked, because it finally answered the question, how does Darth Vader not end up in space? Just flying around for weeks with that smell, like on Robot Chicken, we know happened, you know, but that smells great. You know, but when he comes on the ship, he's radiating this intense darkness that she literally, he leaves the room and she falls on the floor with her back against the wall and is just like shaking because of the evil that she was in the presence of. And she has never felt like anything like that before until Palpatine gets off the shuttle on, you know, the Death Star. And she is so floored by the evil that's radiating from him. She is finally aware that what she's serving, and she's consciously choosing at this point to serve something she knows she shouldn't be, but she can't leave. And I thought that was a really, really powerful thing. And I think one of the reasons why Vader and Palpatine tend to stay out of the limelight with the rest of the Imperial Navy and Army, because there's something about them that might affect people in the wrong way, not the right way. Give them reason to want to leave the Empire.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. We have done a little bit of this, but I think it is inevitable that there would be some Imperial comparisons. Lost Stars, you know, it didn't get the press, obviously, that Aftermath did. All of these books, though, and if you went out on Force Friday, they were all available there in the big toy aisles. I saw them at Target. They had this book. They had Aftermath, the three other young adult novels, all there in a row right there at Target. But interestingly enough, I think if I've looked on Amazon and Goodreads, what I've gotten here and from my research is that, you know, Aftermath on Amazon right now has an average rating of 2.5 stars, whereas on Amazon, Lost Stars has an average rating of 5, pretty much. Do you think that's accurate? Would you say this book is that much better than Aftermath was?
I mean, I don't think that Aftermath is that bad. I mean, I think it's definitely one of the weaker of the novels in the new canon, and I definitely think that Lost Stars is the best novel in the new canon. But I mean, you know, certainly part of that is just sort of like the statistical significance or whatever. You know, I mean, like if you look at like reviews on IMDb, you know, the movies with the lower ratings tend to have like the higher, you know. But I mean, certainly, I think yes, people are liking Lost Stars better than Aftermath, and I think that Aftermath. Aftermath is decent, but this is, yeah, way better. Sure.
Well, the ratings on Amazon kind of line up exactly with mine, so I will say spot on, Mob Mentality. You have scored a victory this time. But I think that also Aftermath has many more reviews than Lost Stars does, and I think that that's really the shame with classifying this as young adult, is that I think that fewer eyes are going to come on it. I think that if there were as many people reading Lost Stars as we're reading Aftermath, the average goes down. And I also think that Aftermath, to go back to something we talked about before, Bruce, was the focus of some very specific hate campaigning. I'm not exonerating it. I didn't think it was fantastic by any stretch, but I do think that dragged the average down. We know that there were people specifically who haven't even read Aftermath that were going in to nail it on the reviews just to mess with it, and I think that Lost Stars escapes that, you know, is able to sort of like skirt around that sort of vitriol as a result.
Well, there were high expectations for Aftermath. When we were leading up to the release of this, I would hear many people say, oh, I can't wait to read Aftermath. Oh, it's so great. I never heard a single person mention Lost Stars. I mean, I probably wouldn't have been able to tell you the title of that young adult novel because my focus was on Aftermath. So you're going with high expectations, and then the book comes out, and, you know, didn't meet up to the level of the expectations, the wait for it. I also know that since it's going to be a trilogy, it's like the first chapter of a three-book series. So it still has the meat to get to it, where this is more a self-contained novel. No one really had any expectations for it, and it's a surprise. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, hey, this is actually a good book. But I agree, John. I'm the same way. I wouldn't give Aftermath 2.5. On the last show, it was 3 is what I'd give it. But 5 up there for Lost Stars.
And I'm sorry, just the other thing about Aftermath, I think, is that a lot of people were expecting it to be something that it's not, and they're blaming it for that. And I think that that's kind of unfair. And, you know, that's probably dragging down the rating as well.
I think you're exactly right, Mike. I think a lot of people going in didn't know that Aftermath wasn't going to be the heir apparent to Heir to the Empire, you know, the same type of story. But I will say this, is that I think Lost Stars and I think Weapon of the Jedi and Moving Target and Smuggler's Run all prove that amazing stories can be done to add to canon. And Aftermath just isn't that. It just doesn't strike the chord that it needs to, even with the type of story it's telling. And Lost Stars nails everything it's trying to do. It actually gives me more excitement for The Force Awakens than anything that really happened in Aftermath, because it directly linked with it in a way that was just, yeah, it was blatant, but it was awesome. You know, that I know exactly where that Star Destroyer came from now, and it added to my knowledge of that movie and the possibility that these characters, there could be some reference to them, or they could, a couple of them could actually be in The Force Awakens. Whereas in Aftermath, I didn't get the feeling at all that anyone but maybe Wedge, which I don't think he is, could be in The Force Awakens, except for maybe this mysterious admiral at the very, very end.
No, Wedge is in everything now. He's popping up all over the place. Every book you pick up, there's Wedge.
Let me just say this. Wedge is in this book, and he gets more screen time and more to do than he does in Aftermath, where he's a big part of the blurb, as if, like, this is a Wedge book. This book is more of a Wedge book.
That's true.
For you guys, any final thoughts, and what would you rate Lost Stars? And we'll do out of five. You can do half stars, quarter stars, but try to keep that so people kind of know where we're coming
from.
Well,
I already said five stars just a moment ago, but actually I'll say five flags of loyalty. I wasn't expecting this book to be that good. And if you're a Star Wars fan, whether looking forward to the new movie or not, I highly recommend it. And especially if you like trashy romance teen novels, this would meet that expectation too, I guess.
Well, I spoiled it already as well. Five stars, loved it from cover to cover. And so, if I had any final thoughts on it, it would be that anybody that asks me what book they should read, like if they're only going to choose one before Force Awakens, this would be the one I'd recommend.
Yeah, I would give it probably four stars. I think that it's easily the best novel from the new continuity, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone who asked.
I don't think, it is really hard for me because this book really is pushing the limit of, is this better than Dark Disciple? I don't know if it is, but I definitely think that it's on that level.
Spoilers, it is.
And no, it's not. but what I'm saying is these books are so similar in what they do for the canon. And, you know, when the books are canon, I want to feel like I'm rewarded for reading them, that they're an event, that I'm going to learn something that I didn't know before, and it's going to feel important. Dark Disciple does that. Lost Stars does that, and it does it a lot. So, heck yeah, this is a five-star book for the new Star Wars canon. And I'm with you, John. If you only read one book before you go see Star Wars The Force Awakens, it needs to be Lost Stars, because it's not just for fans. It's for anyone who kind of likes Star Wars. You know, this is for the teenage girl who does kind of only like, you know, Twilight romance novels. This is for the young teenage boy who likes action and adventure. You know, this is for the adult who kind of likes Star Wars, but, you know, they've never really wanted to start. This is a great novel to get them into. I mean, it might be young adult, but it's really for everyone because it's really Star Wars. Like, it's fully embraced what it means to be Star Wars, which is it's accessible to young and old. And I love that about this book. And I can't give Claudia Gray more props than we already have in this episode, but she's done a phenomenal job. And I didn't think anybody could do it, but yeah, she's put herself right up there with Dark Disciple, and that's amazing. Guys, I love it when we get to sit around and discuss things like this on this show, and I really do hope that this will be one of those shows that a lot of people will listen to and want to go read the book afterwards. I really want this to be something that furthers the sales of this book, because I think it's worth it, you know? And I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk about it and sing its praises, and that it was worth us singing its praises. I'm beyond ecstatic that y'all joined me for this. Don't forget, you can find all of our shows at itunes.com/trekfm. We're all over Apple. Don't forget, while you're there, hit the subscribe button and also give us the star rating and review so you can be entered to win the gift card there. And, of course, a chance to appear on a supplemental episode of the 602 Club. And, of course, if you're not on Apple, we have you covered as well. You can find the shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and, of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from the website at trek.fm. And you can also grab the RSS link as well. I would love to thank Ken Tripp for being the associate producer here for the 602 Club on the show through Patreon. Now, Patreon is the way that you can be a part of the network and help keep all the shows coming to you that we do here. It is an expensive thing. We have bandwidth costs. We have storage costs online. There are many costs with running a network the size of Trek FM, and we're a listener-supported network. So go to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can become part of the team and help bring all of this great content to you. Over 20 different shows and the special feeds we have for you. We need your help, so we hope you'll join us. See that again at patreon.com/trekfm. Now, Bruce, please let everybody know where they can find you before we let you go. I mean, you've got a new podcast yourself going on. So where are you online, and tell everybody about your new podcast?
You can find me on Cloud City Casino. We're a weekly podcast about gaming and collecting in the Star Wars universe. It's an official podcast of StarWarsReport.com. And I also write for the site. In this past episode of Cloud City Casino, we had Sarah and Rich from Skywalking Through Neverland on to talk about Disney Infinity. So that was our most recent episode, episode 16. So check that out. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow me at Admiral_Rex.
Mike, I know that you have some places online that people can find you, and of course, some wonderful 5-star podcasts where people can find you as well.
3.5-star podcasts. One is right here on Trek FM. It's called Commentary Trek Stars. I do it.
5 stars.
With this guy named John, who's a pain in the ass, but I put up with him. We're going to be talking about some Psycho this month. It's October, right? It's horror,
yeah.
Scary.
Shocktober.
Let's talk about some Psycho. So that's what we're going to be doing coming up in the next month. And you can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Trackstar Babies. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
Now, John, Mike stole your thunder talking about one of your 5-star podcasts. But I know you have another to tell everybody about. And, of course, where else you're online.
Yeah, I'm also on a podcast called Words with Nerds with my buddy Craig, iTunes, Stitcher, etc. And you can find me online most easily on Twitter at Kessel Junkie.
Well, everyone, I think at this point you do know where you can find me, but in case you don't, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I do that Instagrammy thing where you take pictures of food and stuff. If you care about that, you can find me at MRushing. You can also find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. And I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, interview the authors. It's a blast. Definitely check that out. And I have my own personal blog as well at 42alifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and may the Force be with you.